I'm so fed up with work. I spent weeks on that project and now they decided to completely change directions. And I just don't have the energy to keep up. I used to love brainstorming new ideas with my team. What changed?
Hi, I'm Dr. Steven Stein, clinical psychologist, emotional intelligence expert, and founder of MHS, a leading publisher of scientific psychological assessments and talent development solutions. If work has you feeling blue, then we have the episode for you. Let's learn how to increase our happiness by building our resilience. Is it really our job to make sure our employees are happy? This can be a pretty polarizing question. While we can't control everyone's emotions, we can help them develop the skills to boost their engagement and satisfaction at work. Let's talk about hardiness, the secret ingredient to resilience. It's all about the three C's: challenge, the degree to which you embrace change and see failure as a learning opportunity; control, the belief that you can influence outcomes; and commitment, a tendency to see life as meaningful and purposeful. These qualities form the bedrock of a resilient, high-performing team. When we cultivate hardiness, we not only handle stress better, but also find more joy and purpose in our roles and in our lives. So maybe we can't always wave a magic wand and create happiness, but we can certainly create an environment where it can flourish. By fostering resilience, we help our teams become stronger, more adaptable, and yes, even happier. Today, I'm joined by our guest, Kim Addis, the founder of Frame of Mind Coaching. She shares how she's helped her clients build resilience and adjust their frame of mind to feel happier at work. Hello there, Kim. I'm so happy to meet you and happy to have you on the podcast. And I'm also happy to talk about today's topic, which is finding happiness in the workplace. But before we jump into that, why don't you just share a little bit about yourself and your journey to Frame of Mind Coaching?
First of all, thank you so much for having me on your podcast. My name is Kim Addis. I own an executive coaching company called Frame of Mind Coaching. We've been coaching leaders, executives, entrepreneurs for the past 20 years. But how did I get here? I've always been fascinated with leadership and what differentiates one leader from another. As a serial entrepreneur, I used to own another company and we used to build simulation-based assessments to help companies make better hiring decisions. And we were really interested in performance. What makes a top performer? And one of the things we discovered was that no matter what the industry was, no matter what the position was, no matter what the background was, there was one key indicator of success that superseded all other indicators. And that was, what is the level of emotional resilience that a person has? The higher the emotional resilience, the more likely they were to succeed. Well, that really provided the background for me jumping into coaching and understanding that if we could help people build their emotional resilience, then we could really help them do what they want to do, achieve the goals they wanted to achieve, and succeed. And that's what I've been up to for the past 20 years in a nutshell.
So we're going to focus a bit more on resilience a little later, but I'm intrigued by the happiness aspect of your work. And why don't you tell me a little bit about what the benefits are of having happy employees?
So we know that when people show up at work and they're happy to be there, they also perform at a much, much higher level. They're giving more of themselves. Their creativity levels are higher, but their overall satisfaction is higher. So what does that mean? They stay longer. They have less sick days. They're more loyal. And they're actually become ambassadors for the organization. So on all fronts, happy employees is a good idea. But also, if we think about it, we spend so many hours of our lives at work. Don't we want to be around people who are happy to be there? And so I just think happiness is really a foundational requirement of building up really great teams.
Yeah, I certainly want to be around happy people and we try and create a happy environment. I deal with a lot of CEOs around and sometimes they say to me, I don't give a damn how they feel. I just want to get working 9 to 5 and get all the stuff out and the outputs, and who cares how they feel? What do you say to those bosses?
I think that what we need to do is show them the ROI of happiness and speak their language. And so I think that there's a tangible, a real kind of financial even ROI that we can demonstrate by just looking at the cost of turnover, the cost of mental health days, the cost of recruiting, all of that. I think part of the pushback is it's a distraction. In order to create happiness, we need to do things that are not work related. We need to have special events, or we need to have parties, or we need to have water cooler conversations. And that takes away from our mission here at work. And I think that's a misconception. And I think that in their minds, there's a cost to building culture and focusing on individual emotional state and making sure that our employees are happy.
So you mentioned the ROI of happier employees. How do we debunk the myths that some of these people come with? They keep pushing back on that.
We could just literally look back at how much turnover did you have this year? Why do people leave? People leave because they're not happy. So let's just look at that number alone. And now let's look at the cost of recruitment. Oh, you hired a recruiting agency. How much did that cost you? How many people were involved in the interview process? How much did that cost you? We can get really tangible here if we need to.
Let's move into some of the strategies. So when you go in an organization, what are some of the steps you take to create a happier organization?
We believe that leaders have a trickle-down effect on their teams. And so happy leaders are more likely to create happy teams. So what we do is we work at a leadership level and we coach them. And one of the things we do is we look at how they think and how their thinking impacts what they do, how they do it, and the results they get. We also look at how their thinking impacts how they feel, including their happiness. And so the process we use is unique. But what we notice is that when leaders show up at work inspired, feeling good, feeling happy, their energy gets deposited or trickled down to the other people in their organization. So we always start at the top. It's a very important approach that we use because we think that when a leader understands the importance of not only emotional resilience, but just emotional well-being, then they invest in it. And they invest in it through coaching, but they invest in it personally and take the time to make sure that the people they're working with are in a good place.
Absolutely. So in addition to engagement, which is a big part of what you're talking about, we get more engaged employees if they're happier, they feel more part of the organization. What other factors should workplaces be looking for when assessing satisfaction of their employees?
We should be looking at their ability to contribute. People are happy when they can contribute and can see the impact of their contribution. And so we want to make that clear. We want to give people opportunities to make valuable contributions as often as possible, even if that means that sometimes we trip or make mistakes along the road toward contribution. So we need to have some level of tolerance for learning. And on the way to learning, to have some space, permission to make mistakes. But, you know, if we can create an environment where what everybody does matters, and we can show them how that matters and how it adds to the overall goals and results that we're getting, we have substantially more satisfied, more engaged, happier employees.
So it sounds like you're adding purpose into the equation. So if we feel that our work is meaningful and contributing, that's going to make us happier when we go home at the end of the day, which is
100%.
Great advice. Okay, so let's move back into resilience is something you talked about earlier. And I understand you did some work, you did a study looking at resilience and its relationship to successful employees, satisfied employees. And of course, that's dear to my heart because I co-wrote a book on hardiness, which talks all about how to become more resilient and deal with the stresses and strains that are all around you. So tell me a little bit about your work in this area and what you've done looking at success and resilience.
So one of the things that we spent some time doing is defining resilience and how it impacts performance. And one of the things we discovered is that in this definition of resilience, What we're really talking about is the ability to bounce back from adversity with speed and agility and leverage the adversity somehow. So it's not only the bounce back, but it's do something with that bad experience. Turn it into maybe an advantage, turn it into a learning experience, turn it into something we work with. So we don't just walk away from it. We hold on to it a little bit and turn it into something that becomes advantageous for us. So that's the extra piece when we look at emotional resilience. So can we build emotional resilience? Is that something we can learn? Or is it something that's naturally built into our DNA? What we find is some people are a little bit more emotionally resilient than others. And it, to some degree, it is in their DNA or in their upbringing or in their genetics. But emotional resilience is something that can definitely be learned. It's easier for some than others. And so the question is, how do we teach emotional resilience? So what we do is we look at how people think. We examine it quite closely, quite intimately, and we look at how their thinking impacts how they experience life at work or at home. Doesn't really matter. But we look at how they process the experiences that have happened to them, the interactions, their relationships, etc. And we look to see if their processing lines up with their goals, their desires. What we find often is that the processing or their thinking, their belief system doesn't always line up with what it is that they want. And we help them make those adjustments so that now they're lining things up and they have internal alignment, which makes life a whole lot easier for them.
One of the most important skills that Kim highlights is the ability to turn a bad situation into an opportunity. Hardy teams view every situation, even failures, as opportunities to learn and to grow. When things go wrong, gather the team to discuss what happened without placing blame and focus on what can be done differently moving forward. Encourage a healthy dialogue around control by challenging defeatist attitudes and emphasizing the team's ability to influence outcomes. And lastly, be transparent about purpose by reminding the team of the significance of their work and how it fits into the larger organizational goals. By fostering these qualities, you can cultivate a resilient and engaged team ready to tackle any challenge. These reflections are crucial if we want to build an understanding of ourselves, and is something Kim prioritizes with her clients.
One of the things that we do when we coach these highly driven individuals is we ask them to journal with their coach every single day, including the weekend. So we give them a journaling prompt at the beginning of the week. And every day that they journal, their coach reads and responds to the journal by asking questions, by digging deeper, by understanding their storyline, by challenging them sometimes, etc. So the coach is with them every single day in their journey. But the journal allows us to see change over time. It allows us to capture data on a daily basis. So what kinds of data are we collecting? We're collecting tangible data, like, okay, here were my sales on week one, and here are my sales on week 10, right? We're collecting turnover rates. And so the whole tangible aspects of coaching, but we're also assessing intangibles. Like, I'm really struggling with this employee week one. Well, we're not coaching the employee, we're coaching you. The employee doesn't change, but on week 10, the employee doesn't even show up anymore because that employee doesn't bother them at all. No challenge. So what we see is over time, they deal with their challenges much more effectively. We also see that when people get coached, people in their world notice that they have changed. And they say things like, you seem different. You're handling this much more effectively. You're not getting upset about it. But it could also sound like, you look different. Did you get a haircut? It could sound something like that. So we're looking at tangible change. We're looking at intangible change. And we're also looking at anecdotal or self-reflective change. I feel different. I feel less stressed. I feel more at peace. So those are the things we're looking
at. Okay, so it's a combination of the intangibles and some sense of tangible changes that are observed either by themselves or others in there. So let's look at the flip side. I understand you've written some stuff related to burnout. And I guess one article that caught our attention was you talked about how burnout relates to searching for balance in our work and our personal lives and shifting the way we focus in terms of how we think about that. Maybe you can tell us a bit about your work on burnout.
Sure. So in order for us to talk about burnout, let's talk about the antithesis of that, or what people think is the antithesis, is people are always searching for work-life balance, right? You must have heard that a million times, at least. And I always say that this search for work-life balance is a little bit misguided. Why? Because when we think about the word balance, what do we usually think about? I usually like to use the analogy of going to the park and seeing two kids on a teeter-totter. What happens when they're in perfect balance?
It's not moving too far.
It's nothing. Nothing's happening, right? So are we looking for a life like that? We're not. We like the ride. We want the ride. But sometimes the ride gets bumpy. And so what we're really looking at is helping people figure out how to enjoy the ride or feel okay when the bumps are there. I'm not encouraging work-life balance. I'm encouraging increased resilience, right? So handling the good, the bad, all the stuff, so that it doesn't rattle us so much. It doesn't throw us off the teeter-totter. We can handle it. We stay on. But more than that, when we look at burnout, what we're really talking about is energy management. How are we managing our energy? And when we look at managing energy, we often have a set of beliefs that keep us trapped in situations, in environments that aren't healthy for us, because we think we have no choice. And that's something we invent or create for ourselves. And so what we encourage people to do is really look at their belief systems to say, what is it that I actually need to do here? What must I do? So people often take on obligations, responsibilities that don't belong to them. And so what we do is we recalibrate their responsibilities and we help them let go of a lot of responsibilities that they don't need to have. And then we help them take on responsibilities that they aren't used to taking on. And that is to help them become responsible for how they think, how they feel, and what they do. And so we change things around. We lighten their load on one hand, and we give them a small thing to take care of, which is themselves.
So, Kim, I understand you have some experience in terms of how an actual mindset change can make a difference in your life, in your work life. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, I have many examples. One example that I have is that about 8 years ago, I was introduced to a young man. I had a client. He said, I want you to coach a good friend of mine, but I want you to make sure that you treat him with kid gloves. And I thought that was a very strange way to introduce me to this man, because usually when I coach people, I don't have kid gloves on at all. And I said, explain to me, like, why would you say that? He said, he's in his early 30s and he has stage 4 cancer. And so when I got on the phone with him, I said, okay, I have two questions for you. Question number one, how long do you think you have left to live? It was a very, very difficult question to ask. I was nervous to ask it, but I did ask it. And he said, I'm not sure. I'm guessing about 2 years. I'm on all these experimental drugs. I think I've already outlived my time, but that's what I'm guessing. I said, okay, what do you want to achieve as a result of coaching? And he said, well, what I really, really want from you is I want you to help me improve my productivity. And I was a bit shocked, because if I only had 2 years left to live, I don't know that I would care a whole lot about my productivity. And I said, well, why is that important to you? He said, well, I own a company and I need to grow it and I need to sell my company. So that he was a single child of an only child of a single mom. And I need to make sure that my mom is left in a good place when I go. I said, okay, let me ask you a different question. What is it that you really want? He said, I want more time and I do want to sell my company, but I want to travel and I want to take my mother on a great adventure. And I want to buy a house and I want to be in a relationship. I want to get married and I want to run a marathon and I want to buy a home. I said, let's work on that. And we started working together. And one of the things I discovered was that he ran a financial services company, an investment company, and he did all the work. He was responsible for getting the clients in. He was responsible for making sure that any work that came in the door, he had to make sure that he had his eyes on it and it was going out in good condition. And I said, how many hours a day are you working? I realized he was working way longer, 15, 16 hours a day. I'm like, we need to reduce that. We need to give those experimental drugs a chance to work. We need to reduce your stress. I said, you need to think about hiring people. And he said, I can't hire people. I can't afford to hire people. And I said, I don't think you can afford not to hire people. So his thinking kept him working at this pace and not doing all the things he wanted to do. And so what we slowly started to do is help him shift his thinking. And we looked at his numbers and we looked at his team and we shifted some things around. He started hiring people, started easing up his own workload. So 8 years later, he's still around. He took his mom on 2 great vacations. He bought a house. He got married. His wife is pregnant now. He sold half of his company. He not only ran a marathon, he climbed Mount Kilimanjaro. And he's just doing all these things because we decided to focus on what he wanted instead of only what he thought was possible.
That is an amazing example. It sounds like you did an excellent job of navigating that situation. And so I'm wondering, what advice do you have for leaders who want to help their employees improve their mindsets or attempt to find balance in life?
The word managing others is an interesting term, right? Because it assumes that we actually have control over others. And that's not really true. Our first approach is to help leaders learn the skills of self-management. And I will say that there are many leaders who have extremely high positions and have made big impacts in the world, but do not know the skills of self-management. They just don't. And it's astounding to me. And so the first thing we do is we teach them self-management. So it's very hard to attempt to manage others without self-management. So that's the first approach, first step. The second thing we do is we teach them coaching skills as opposed to management skills. And when we're teaching coaching skills, what we're really teaching is helping a leader, helping his or her employees achieve their goals that happen to coincide or align with the goals of the organization. So we're creating win situations. But I would say to you that great leaders are also great coaches, and many leaders would benefit from learning really fundamental coaching skills.
So that's the whole new change in our leadership environment where we become coaches. And I think of sports teams and other organizations where coaching is more the style of getting people to where they want to be and to where you want to be as well. So what are some of the conversations that these leaders should have with the people they're coaching? How do they open the conversation? Where should it be leading?
I think that a lot of leaders don't take the time to learn, to ask questions. They see what they see and they make a lot of assumptions. They see what they see and they come in, and leaders make a lot of, let's call them, coaching mistakes. They have the answers, so they give the answer. They jump into problem solving. They focus on behaviors instead of beliefs, that kind of thing. And so the first step in terms of learning how to coach is just being able to extract information and learn, asking questions, getting the story, digging under the story. And what the big shift that we try to help leaders make is when you're working with team members, instead of focusing on their behaviors, really work to focus on their beliefs, because their beliefs drive behaviors. And so let's look for those beliefs that are causing certain performance issues. Let's look for them. So we teach leaders to shift from this constant focus on here's what this person is doing to let's look at what is this person actually thinking.
So it seems like one of the themes we've been seeing in this podcast over the season is the importance of leaders to listen, the importance of curiosity, asking questions. Seems to be a common thread that we're hearing from all the people that we're inviting on here. And that's the direction you see things going.
Yeah, I think it's really important. I think a lot of times leaders, they know a lot, and so they have a lot to say. But I think they would benefit from spending some time gathering information and listening, for sure, 100%.
So one of the things that we like to close every interview with, we ask everyone the same question. And the question is, if you could choose one word to describe the future of work, What would that word be and why?
I think the word would be innovation, because we not only are we seeing technological innovation, I think we're going to need to see leadership innovation. We're going to need to see educational innovation. We can't keep teaching our students the same way as we always have. So I really think that we're innovating tactically, but also interpersonally. We need to, we must, in order to be competitive.
That's great, Kim. It's been really nice talking to you and learning a lot about your work and the things that you're doing. And thank you so much for being part of our podcast series. If our listeners want to get a hold of you, what's the best way to find you?
Best way to find me is go to the website, frameofmindcoaching.com. We've got all kinds of things on there, a blog, testimonials, you name it. But if you want to reach me directly, it's kim@frameofmindcoaching.com. I do answer my emails, so please feel free to reach out. Thank you for having me on it as a guest. I'm honored, and it was great to meet you too.
And there you have it. A hearty workplace is a happy workplace. Building hardiness means creating a team ready to embrace these challenges, believe in their ability to influence outcomes, and see their work as meaningful. It's a game changer for reducing stress and boosting resilience. The best part? It's a skill that anyone can develop. In fact, MHS research highlights some impressive benefits. Hardy individuals report lower emotional exhaustion, less cynicism, and greater professional efficacy. They're not just surviving, they're thriving. If you're interested in learning more about Kim and Frame of Mind Coaching, we've linked to her website in the show notes, along with my book, Hardiness, and more on MHS offerings around developing hardiness. If you enjoyed the interview, we'd love to hear from you. So please make sure to subscribe and review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Thanks for joining us.